From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Elmwood, Berkeley.
I live in the Haight.
North-ish, Oakland.
I live in the Western Addition.
Lake Merritt.
The Twin Peaks.
I'm from the Outer Sunset, and I love it.
Coming up, we'll reflect upon the Bay Area response to what's happening in Baltimore.
I came out today because I'm a veteran, I'm a minority, and I feel like the system has failed us all the way from the top down to us as the citizens. That's why I'm out here in the streets, so that I'm not a failure.
Also, we'll find out what it's like to get a college degree behind bars.
You got this floating feelings like you're in love, you know, that you achieved this here.
And we'll check out a film about how some county inmates are getting a high school education while serving time.
The first thing they try and do is actually provide people with hope.
We're getting educated today on Cross Currents. The death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore has once again ignited passions around the country over police violence against people of color. Here in the Bay Area, members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 10 shut down the Port of Oakland for much of the day Friday and held a rally attended by hundreds of people. Kevin Stewart, a member of the union, said he felt compelled to take a stand.
It affects all of us, but at this point right now, it's affecting us as black men. And so I felt like, man, if I didn't come out here and support my union, which has been supporting me, I'd be wrong.
While Baltimore is the focus of attention right now, there are concerns about Bay Area police as well. Statistics compiled by the San Francisco Chronicle from court records indicate that police may act more aggressively towards people of color in San Francisco. African Americans in the city are cited at remarkably disproportionate numbers for resisting arrest. For Stewart, this disparity is too much, and it's why the port is rallying behind the indictment of six police officers in the death of Freddie Gray.
I think now you're going to start to see that officers going to think before they react now, because they now know that it's a possibility now you might just be getting charged with murder.
Accountability could be one step towards bringing change to relationships between police and communities of color. However, the protests are not only about police brutality, but about dramatic disparities experienced by black communities. African-American men are incarcerated at rates far higher than other ethnic groups. Most black men will enter the prison system without a college education, and most will leave that way. But for a lucky few at San Quentin State Prison, college is actually a possibility. Today, we'll hear from our partners at SQPR, the San Quentin Prison Report, about that one-of-a-kind program.
San Quentin Prison Report.
Bringing you hidden stories from life inside.
In order to make something grow, you got to own a little dirt.
You don't tell. You see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop, and all of a sudden, you heard this.
I mean, once you're in the cell, you're listening.
What does it take to house a university degree program inside a prison? And what impact does it have on prisoners? SQPR's Tommy Shakur Ross has that story.
Patton University at San Quentin isn't a typical college campus. There aren't any architecturally designed buildings with sweeping archways, thick columns, and pointed steeples. But there are a few bungalow trailers with ramps for wheelchair accessibility to classrooms, which is enclosed within a 20-foot fence with razor wire. It's called the Prison University Project.
We are essentially an extension site of Patton University in Oakland. So we are accredited through that, so that the associate's degree that you earn here would just be the same as the associate's degree you would earn on the streets, perhaps even more rigorous.
That's Kara Urian, the program director.
The mission of Patton University at San Quentin is to provide really high quality and rigorous education to the men who reside at San Quentin State Prison.
Clearly, the Prison University Project is unique in and of itself. But one of the factors that makes it unique is that it's the only on-site program for prisoners in the state of California.
I think one of the most important elements of our program is that we're physically here 6 days a week. We run between 18 and 20 classes a semester. At any given moment in time, we have about 330 students.
Another unique factor includes the volunteer tutors and instructors that give freely of their time, energy, and effort to teach the prisoners at San Quentin.
There would be no program without the volunteers, and I started as a volunteer myself. So first of all, they come our way primarily through word of mouth. We do some recruitment efforts, but at this point, we're sort of firmly established. We have a lot of professors at Berkeley and Stanford and SF State in particular who have been involved and kind of passed the word along in their departments.
So my name's Laura Wagner. I'm a PhD candidate in the Department of Comparative Literature at UC Berkeley, and I'm a volunteer instructor in the English department here.
This is a challenging assignment. It's an assignment that I have assigned in graduate level classes, so it was meant to really push the boundaries of what we feel about what needs to do a thorough needs assessment.
Wagner began volunteering last semester.
I was nervous, just first time, and being afraid to kind of put a toe out of line and do something wrong. But one of the biggest surprises really was then being in the classroom and how it felt like a normal classroom. And as soon as kind of we launched into the discussion and introductions and thinking about the syllabus and what it was we were going to do together over the course of the semester, that it really was kind of business as usual in the classroom, and that was really a joy. And kind of all of the nervousness or the things to remember on the way and just fell away.
I look forward to reading these. I'm going to have them graded and back to you by Monday. And this is worth 3 homework assignments.
She finds teaching the students gratifying.
My reward is just the feeling after when you're leaving and know that class has gone well and you've had an interesting discussion, and there's just kind of a high that you get from that. And that's really all the reward you need.
Tommy Winfrey, a student, shares his opinion about the teachers at Patton College.
Teachers in the classroom, they really care about learning and helping people, and I think that's why a lot of them are here.
Now, what's distinctly unique about Patton University at San Quentin is that it provides a college education for prisoners entirely free, and California taxpayers don't foot the bill. The Prison University Project is a nonprofit organization that's funded completely by foundation grants and donations. Today, Winfrey is Patton University alumnus. He graduated recently. Interestingly, he acknowledges possible sentiments in society regarding free college education for prisoners.
Ooh, that's a big one, because I know people on the streets, that's a big issue. Why should I deserve to be educated when someone else's child that hasn't done a horrible act that landed them in prison? And they can't be educated. If we invested in education, our prison population would be reduced. That's a long-term ideal, but I think in the end, society would benefit if everybody could go to college for free.
Overall, the Patton College program has had a huge impact on Winfrey's life.
It was the first time for me to be in an actual classroom setting for like almost 20 years. It helped break down barriers that the prison had probably set in my mind for a while. Racial barriers were broken. I started to not isolate myself so much.
There were definite benefits in the classroom, but it also helped him see himself and his interactions with others in a more complex way.
But the biggest thing I think I learned in the classroom was critical thinking skills. That really helped me. You know, I saw the world in black and white for a long time, and I think through going to college and doing other things I've done here at San Quentin, my mind's really open to new ideas. And thinking critically about my life and how I got here was some of the things that college has given me a great gift in that way.
Urian says that many men in prisons throughout California have heard about Patton University at San Quentin, and they write the Prison University Project because they want to find out if they can participate in it.
We receive about 3 or 4 letters a week from men in different prisons who are trying to transfer to San Quentin in order to be able to enroll.
Actually, I was one of those men that has written the Prison University Project when I was housed at another prison a few years ago. Shortly afterwards, I received a letter of acceptance. And as a result, I was transferred to San Quentin in order to enroll. But the first thing I had to do was get added to the waiting list, which had over 400 men on it.
Now we have a couple of hundred men who are on the wait list currently, so it takes anywhere between 12 and 15 months from the day that you get on the wait list to actually enroll in the program.
Ordinarily, it takes about 2 years to achieve an AA degree. But here at San Quentin, it can take 3 to 5 years, depending on individual circumstances. During the most recent graduation ceremony, a total of 8 men received associate degrees.
Kenyatta Gray, A. Terrell Merritt, Quentin Walker, Alan Webb, Cao Nu, Ali Tambora, Tommy Winfrey.
I was compelled to ask a few of the graduates to describe how I felt to graduate.
You got this floating feelings like you're in love, you know, that you achieved this here.
I feel like what Rocky felt when he knocked out Apollo Creed like a champ.
Soon I will begin my sixth semester as a student in Patton University at San Quentin. I've read writings by John Locke, Adrian Rich, Bell Hooks, and Zora Neale Hurston. I'm benefiting from the teacher-student experience, engaging in topics and discussions about the notion of masculinity and femininity, and even writing essays on feminism. For the first time in my life, I'm earning all A's in English. I'm extremely grateful for the college education I'm receiving. It's having a phenomenal impact on my life. And someday, in the not-so-distant future, I too look forward to wearing that black cap and gown, feeling like a champ, in love, and floating across the stage to receiving an Associate of Arts degree. I'm Tommy Shakur Ross for the San Quentin Prison Report. I'm out.
The San Quentin Prison Report is a partnership between KALW and the prison that trains inmates to be journalists. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Education is considered a way out of the prison system and poverty, and programs behind bars are not limited to San Quentin. In fact, in our next segment, we're going to hear about an education that, for some, is more attainable from behind bars. Inside the San Bruno Jail No. 5 is the Five Keys Charter School. It's one of the nation's first high schools within a jail, and it's the subject of a documentary called The Corridor. KALW's Leela Day sat down with documentarians Annalise Wunderlich and Richard O'Connell to find out more.
I think what makes it different from the many GED programs and even college programs that are available in prisons is that it was the first county jail to actually have a real charter high school built, custom built inside it. The school is a fully accredited California. They have to take a California State exit exam. It's a real high school diploma as opposed to a GED, which does make a real difference.
And so what's been the reaction from some of the inmates to being a part of this program?
There are people there who immediately adapt, and they see this as a great opportunity, and they really take advantage of it, and of course they get their diploma. But there are people there then who don't feel that it's a good idea to be there, that the city or the county is earning money from their participation. And at times, as we focus on in the film, they're often not sure what some of the things they're learning has to do with them.
How much does it cost per student to invest in a high school diploma in jail versus outside of jail? Do we know that?
You know, we don't know the cost, but they calculate a savings from actually putting, these students through school program versus through just going straight into the general population. And the calculations are based on the fact that these people have lower recidivism. They're less likely to come back in. They're less likely to commit crime.
It's just interesting to have this program, you know, in an actual jail. Like many of us would look at it and say, why wasn't something like this available? Or why weren't the resources put into these men before they even got in jail, right?
Most of the characters that we spoke with on camera talked about having a very negative experience in their public school education as children. A lot of them had undiagnosed learning disabilities. They came from violent communities where they experienced a lot of trauma and never received counseling. So for a lot of factors, they ended up dropping out of high school because they didn't feel like that was a good pathway for them.
The one thing that we find about the school is there is an approach here, and it's not just about education. It's about
their concept is, generally speaking, restorative justice. And so that's in the thinking. And the first thing they try and do is actually provide people with hope. They bring them in, they try and get them back to normal if they've been on drugs, rehabilitate them somehow over the first couple of weeks, and slowly but surely bring them up to a place where they can actually decide themselves whether this is a good idea for them or not. As Annalise said, there are other programs they can take on. But many choose this because it means they're out of their cells, they're actually interacting with other people. It's interesting more than sitting around watching television. And so there's a lot of very good reasons why they're actually taking part.
So we're actually going to go to a clip right now. This is teacher Maisha Lake. Tell us a little bit about Maisha's class.
Maisha is a literature teacher at the school, and she was teaching, when we filmed her, she was teaching a class about William Blake's poetry, and in particular, The Poison Tree. And the students really had a strong reaction to the poem and saw a lot of direct parallels with their own lives.
The title itself is a what?
Analogy.
Okay, analogy or a metaphor. A poison tree. When you think of trees, do you generally think of poison?
No.
No, we think of trees as being something that are what?
Giving.
Life-giving. Okay. Nurturing, maybe. For healing or health. But this is a poison tree. What poisons this tree?
Anger.
That's another good word for anger.
Wrath.
We do not need our thesaurus.
Maisha's just a great teacher. She's got this warm, almost motherly quality with her students, and she's really determined to make them realize the hard work involved with being your best self and try to strengthen them in that.
This is where you are, but this is not where you fit. You fit somewhere else. So when you this is temporary. When you find where you fit, you stay where you fit and not come back, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so nobody fits here at all. Okay.
So what's different about the types of teachers that are teaching in a jail?
One of the challenges of being in this institution is, we talk about it in the film, is the clash of cultures. And to a certain extent, the teachers arguably are incarcerated as well for this period during the day. They are in a room that is guarded outside by deputies. And so there is that dynamic between the students and the teachers, and between the teachers and the deputies, and between the deputies and the students. And it's very interesting.
The teachers are not allowed to know anything about the crimes of any of their students. There's a very strict policy at the school that they cannot do that research, and if they do, they got to keep it to themselves. And that's part of this philosophy of treating every student as an individual, unique from their crime.
And I just want to add, because I think it's important to mention that there is the big thing here is, and you asked earlier, why isn't this done everywhere? This is a hassle. This is not easy. If this was easy, people would be doing it. This is a big deal. You know, it is dangerous. You know, there is panic buttons in the room where if the teacher presses the panic button, and they do happen and fights do break out, 20 or 30 deputies rush into that room. And actually, there is a lot of the teachers suffering from, a PTSD just because they've seen fights or been part of, issues that have occurred in the classrooms.
And I mean, there are high school GED programs in prison, but in jail, it's not that common. I mean, they have shorter sentences as well. So is there what happens when someone starts the program and then maybe they're released? And are you finding that people are still continuing on?
Yeah, this is a great question because it gets at what we didn't capture in our film, which is a huge part of the school, which is that they have many facilities and programs outside of jail. So the idea is that after the students get released, they can continue on the same program through Five Keys Charter School to earn the credits they need to get their diploma. And they even have two different graduation ceremonies, one for students that are in custody and another for the students that are out of custody.
And interestingly, one of our characters actually is released and comes back in while we're shooting. And so she actually goes back into class twice, and which is was something we really wanted to capture because it is about the revolving door and it is about those challenges. And she can't even talk about step by step. She talks about second by second.
So something else I love for listeners to hear is this clip from Keith Kimmins on graduation day. Let's have a listen.
I dropped out of high school. I've been to several trade schools, never completed any of them. And I've been to four different drug programs, would never finish any of them either. I would get close to finishing, but right when it got toward the end, I'd get scared. I guess I was scared of being successful, so I sabotaged myself. But at this stage of my life, at 59 years old, I stand up here and I can say, I have finally completed something.
That was Keith Kimmins, who graduated from the Five Keys Charter School in San Bruno Jail. I'm speaking with Annalise Wunderlich and Richard O'Connell, directors of a film called The Corridor. So, talking about recidivism, we don't know really what the fate of some of these men and women are going to be, but, you know, it's hopeful. It's hopeful, and people like Keith Kimmins, who participate in this program, can you tell us a little bit about, like, where they are now?
Well, I mean, just to talk about the clip for a second, because, you know, it's one of our favorite pieces that we captured. And but to us, and you had asked earlier about recidivism, I mean, he encapsulated, you know, what the school is trying to do, where he had failed all his life, and then he did something that he actually achieved. And that is like a domino effect. Suddenly you actually have a different experience, and you experience that you can actually do things and get things done, and there's hope. And even at 59, it just felt so powerful that, you know, having lived most or a good chunk of his life, that finally he had actually experienced that. And it was very, very powerful. I mean, that room, everyone was very emotional that day after he spoke. I want to say, though, I think that Keith is also a good example of the fact that you just need a greater focus on education and resources to keep people in school at an earlier age. Because, you know, I mean, this is essentially what the film is about, is the fact that really everybody needs the same level of education, and whatever the resources are put into that for communities that are more challenged with that, that's what needs to happen.
Those were filmmakers Annalise Wunderlich and Richard O'Connell speaking with KALW's Leela Day. The Corridor documentary is still in production, and they're raising funds for completion. You can find out more by visiting our website, kalw.org. KALW is listener-supported public radio, and tomorrow is a great day to show your support for us and other nonprofits on the peninsula. May 5th is Silicon Valley Gives Day, a one-day campaign rallying support for charitable causes. Be part of it by supporting local public radio and other organizations tomorrow. It makes a difference. Find a link to Silicon Valley Gives at kalw.org. Our team includes Audrey Dilling, Chris Hambrick, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ted Muldoon, Colin Peden, Liz Mack, Casey Miner, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Judy Silber. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll be talking about how meditation can help us as we age.
Most medications have side effects. What we're trying to do is help people not reach the point where their physicians have to make those decisions.
How we handle hypertension. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. This music is by the Electric Squeezebox Orchestra, a 17-piece combo that plays their own original compositions and has no squeeze box. You can hear the Electric Squeeze Box Orchestra on Saturday as part of this year's Yerba Buena Gardens Festival. That takes place at Yerba Buena Gardens, starting at 1:30 in the afternoon. And it's free. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Treffner.